Running down Liverpool Street and a light bulb went off over my head. My big baldy gammon bollocks head, big light bulb went off. Big light bulb went off. You could hear it. Ding! Went off. And I realised, you know why? We are being told constantly. Constantly. Do you know why? And Tony's going to join me now. Tony is there. Just before we say hello to Tony, do you know why we are being told constantly that we are racist, we are misogynistic, we are sexist? I'll tell you why. They are preparing us for the introduction of the inevitable social crediting system. That's why. Anyway, we'll leave it there. We'll welcome back to the programme our friend Tony Gosling, the host of the politics show on BCFM, former BBC journalist and the curator of Bilderberg.org. All you need to know, one-stop shop for information about Bilderbergers. Welcome back, Tony. How you doing?
Hi, Rashid. Sorry I had to move. I just started, got ready, and there was no proper data coverage at all, so I had to just move.
That happens, pal. It happens.
Anyway,
don't worry about it. Listen,
fascinating decision today, isn't it?
What do you think of it? First of all, for people just joining the programme late, the Supreme Court, after hearing arguments last week, delivered their opinion, their judgment this morning, 11 of them unanimously saying that Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister and his government were acted unlawfully for proroguing Parliament for so long, and therefore it doesn't amount to a hill of beans, and Parliament basically can be recalled. John Bercow recalled them today, they're back tomorrow. What do you make of the decision? What does it mean constitutionally, Tony?
Well, look, first of all, you have to look at whether the Supreme Court is actually independent. I would suggest no way is it independent. I mean, what we would have expected to see would be some dissenting voices within the Supreme Court if they decided they want all 11 justices to get involved in this. 11 being an interesting number to have involved. It's just, this whole decision stinks, as far as I'm concerned. It is, I suppose people have seen when the Chief Justice was delivering her statement, this kind of outfit she was wearing with the giant spider on.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, this gives us an idea of who it is that's making this judgment. I tweeted, didn't I, earlier today, I'm not sure if people saw it, a link to an article back when Jack Straw was Home Secretary, where he prohibited any, at the time, everyone involved in the judiciary had to declare whether or not they were involved in secret societies or Freemasonry. And Jack Straw vetoed that, and there was a big outcry at the time saying, well, hang on a minute, you know, there's all sorts of, conflicts of interest if people are also Masons as well as judges, particularly top judges. So the other thing to mention to do with Freemasonry is that there's a lot of evidence that the whole consolidation of Europe as the consolidation of the United States into one giant country was a Masonic project. So we need to know if these people are involved in that project or whether they're actually really independent judges.
Very good. Let's remind our listeners, Tony is referring to a rather fetching brooch worn by Lady Hales this morning, the chair of the Supreme Court. She delivered the verdict, the judgment, and she was wearing a very fetching silver spider brooch. And that's not accidental or coincidental. I agree with you. I don't believe that for a minute. That's almost bald-faced or bare-faced, in your face, telling you and telling me this is who we are.
Yeah. I think it's a sort of hidden message. The idea is if anyone actually picks up on it, they'll be told, oh, this is a silly conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
But of course, the spider is an occult symbol.
Yeah.
And Freemasonry and other secret societies are occult groups. Now, I mean, you know, I just think that it seems to me that whatever. This is a very strange decision. I found her tone of voice, etc., as she was delivering it, a little bit nervous, like she knew that what she was doing wasn't really just. And it isn't just. The idea really here is that what she's been saying is that really re-emphasising that whatever Parliament says goes, Parliament is sovereign. She's actually, what she's doing is she's actually altering the Constitution, because generally, under the British Constitution, it is the people who are sovereign. The people elect Parliament. Parliament, and Parliament is supposed to be serving the people. What she's saying is, oh, actually, it's okay for the Parliament to do what it wants. Once they can wangle their way into getting into Parliament, then they can do anything. They can institute any laws they want to. And, of course, that isn't really the spirit of the Constitution. The Constitution really is about the people. The people are a sort of... A sort of backstop, you know. The backstop is the wrong word to use. Sorry. The people, the people are the actual sovereign, and that's what democracy means. And therefore, what she's done, I think, is just completely wrong. And the other thing is that Boris is, I mean, okay, look at the timing of this. Just before Jeremy Corbyn's main speech at the Labour conference, and they will be bringing Parliament back just before the Conservative conference starts. So it was, it's not normal to have Parliament sitting, as I've known for many years I've been covering it, during the party conference season. But what this judgment has now said is that Parliament is coming back, even though the conference season is in full swing. We have a month of conference season, starting with the Lib Dems and ending 4 weeks later with the Scottish National Party. But now, apparently, just after the Lib Dems and the Labour Party conference is finishing, then Parliament is going to be recalled. And all the, this is really going to mess up the Conservative conference, of course. See, the idea is that this is a kick in the teeth for the Tories, because they're the Brexit party. So they've done everything they possibly can to wreck and ruin any opportunity to do what the people decided in 2016, which is to leave the European Union. Exactly as, for example, the Catalonians wanted to leave Spain. The Venetians are beginning to get very strong campaigning to leave Italy, for example. This is what's happening, because there's concentration of power in the centre, in Brussels, as the French Gilets Jaunes have been pointing out, and people have decided they've had enough of it. But, of course, the oligarchy isn't having any of it. They're going to fight to the last drop of blood to keep their power and to keep their oligarchy.
And the biggest unions in the country have thrown their weight behind the Labour Party. Well, of course they support the Labour Party, the unions, but they've basically said they agree that the Labour Party should campaign to remain in advance of any second referendum or even ahead of a general election. Now, I'm a working class kid from a working class council estate. My family, many of them worked in factories, Tony. Not only in Ireland, but many of my family came over here and worked in factories. They're trade unionists to the bone. That's incredible and leaves me incredulous that trade unions
let me explain why that is. I think there's been a lot of lobbying, and some of it is justified in the trade union movement, saying that the EU guarantees workers' rights better than the British Conservative governments have done. But, and there's a lot of truth to that.
I don't agree with you.
This is an EU-wide law, and the fact is that, say, for example, if the Labour Party was to gain power with no Brussels laws to be able to do what they wanted, then you would see a massive increase, a much bigger increase in the rights of workers in the UK. So what they're doing is they've swapped their position. For many, many years, the EU and the left of the Labour Party were campaigning, as people like Tony Benn, etc., campaigning against the EU. And Michael Foot, the Labour leader, this all changed when? It changed when the leadership of Neil Kinnock, the diluted Labour man who completely failed and destroyed the Labour Party in many ways, got rid of Clause 4, which was about nationalisation, and turned it into a neoliberal party, which was then taken over by Tony Blair. So that is the route that the Labour Party went down when they've decided slowly over the years to become pro-EU, Richie.
Yeah, I agree with you. I disagree on what you said about workers' rights, Tony. It's impossible, because of the makeup of the European Union, for British citizens to do anything about workers' rights. At least, I mean, we know that democracy is dead in this country, it doesn't exist, but at least here, you've got more of a chance of doing something about your working conditions than depending on the European Union. That's what I would argue. But look, we've had this discussion, you and I, before, and I respect your point of view. Tony Gosling is our guest, the host of the Politics Show on BCFM. Crazy day, this. What about Jeremy Corbyn? Is Jeremy Corbyn going to be the Labour leader at the next election? His position must be in dire straits at the moment, is it?
Yes. Well, I mean, basically, he's not really his own person anymore, is he?
No.
Everything he seems to say is totally... I mean, he's spent 30, 40 years in the Labour Party, many of those as an MP, campaigning against the European Union. He called it many, many times a boss's club. We're having nothing to do with it. As soon as possible, we're going to get out. And now he's in the position where he's surrounded by his Blairite MPs. He is being forced to do the opposite. You know, what they're talking about, you know, interesting, they're always going on about, oh, the Boris is totally anti-democratic by proroguing Parliament. No. You are anti-democratic, Jeremy Corbyn, by saying, going into the last election, saying you honour the result of the referendum, and then doing totally the opposite. The complete and utter opposite now. They're moving towards becoming a Remain party competing with the Europeans.
They're
just doing everything they possibly can to delay. You know, this is the Martin Bormann. He was Hitler's secretary. This is his style of politics. What you do is you agree, you make a great big fuss about saying yes, that's fine, and then you slowly introduce obstacles. That was the Bormann way of doing things with Adolf Hitler. But that's what they're doing with the British people. The Labour Party have said, yes, we agree, we will honour your decision, and then slowly but surely they said, oh, we're really, really sorry. We can't do that. And now they're even fighting shall have a general election. So it's quite obvious what's going on. This is all just delaying tactics, both from the Labour Party and, of course, from the Supreme Court today as well. And anyone that thinks that these people are independent, well, they need to pinch themselves, because, of course, the top judges are not independent. None of these lawyers get out of bed for less than £1,000 an hour. This is what drives the judiciary in Britain today. It's nothing to do with justice. It's money. And they will not even start moving. So who's behind all this? It's Gina Miller. Amazing woman. Who is she? She's just come in and paid a whole load of solicitors to bring a court case, which most ordinary people can't do anymore, because Kenneth Clark, the Bilderberger and pro-Remainer, cut off all forms of legal aid. Yeah. So she is just, with her money bags, hedge fund dosh, not even from Britain, has decided to overthrow the decision of the British people once more. So we're dealing in a running fight, Richie, really, a battle of hearts, for hearts and minds, anything to delay and stop Brexit. And of course, Boris is going to do whatever he can, and the people around him, to actually carry out what the people said. But whether he will be able to is anyone's guess.
Right, here's my tuppence worth on the future. I want to get your thoughts on this. Tony Gosling is our guest. Thisweek.org.uk for more on Tony. Bilderberg.org. Right, this is what I think. It was never going to happen, Brexit. So forget about that. It was never going to happen anyway. It isn't going to happen. I believe...
Well, exactly what Carl von Habsburg said, and I have said this before on your show, Richie, but everyone should know this. They don't, of course. The mainstream media don't report it. The guy who is the successor to the Habsburg Empire, which was gotten rid of in World War One, but he's Karl von Habsburg. These European aristocrats still own all the property and all the land and all the money that they own. They just aren't supposedly in charge anymore. And he started in Munich, Germany, in the 1920s, this thing called the Pan-European Union. Well, he didn't. His forefathers, successors did. But this is the epicenter of European aristocracy, really what we would have called a couple of hundred years ago the Holy Roman Empire, the people that actually own Europe, telling the people what they're going to do, and then finding a few puppet politicians in order to do that, administer it, and to try and give some kind of semblance of democracy, perhaps. But Karl von Habsburg, this is back in, I believe it was February this year, maybe March, made a statement saying, well, Brexit is like a reality TV show. It's extremely entertaining watching Britain try to leave. And we know they can't. This is your take, I guess, Richie. We know they can't, but it's entertaining watching them try.
Entertaining watching them try. So I look into the future, into the very near future, and I see civil unrest. I really do. I see civil unrest. That will be... I'm not saying it'll be apocalyptic civil unrest, but it'll be violent, and it'll be something that maybe we haven't seen since the miner strikes. I see that. I see the right being mobilised, you know, to get out there. And I also see that, and this is where I put my tinfoil hat on, I see that as being part of some elite agenda as well, to get riots on the street, because out of that chaos, Right, go ahead.
It could well be. Of course, that sort of thing, if it happens in the States, gets extremely bloody because you've got an armed population. Another thing to say about this decision today, though, is, of course, it sends a very strong message to the UN General Assembly in New York, which is just convening, and Boris Johnson, who is over there, he's suddenly got egg on his face and red-faced at the international forum. So that's, I think, why the Supreme Court have taken all this time. I mean, for goodness sake, they started their deliberations beginning of last week, and it's taken them over a week to actually finish. Now, they could have done this in a few hours if they wanted to, but no. They've understood, well, we can get a whole week of headlines out of this, and also we can choose the timing of our final pronouncement to make it as impossible and awkward as possible for Boris and the Remainers, and so that's exactly what they've done. The Queen's speech, by the way, Richie, very few mainstream commentators have pointed this out, is usually in June, right? So we still haven't had this Queen's speech yet, and that was delayed by Theresa May deliberately to create this situation we've got now. You know, I just think we're looking at a staged, managed problem for Boris, you know, basically a stage-managed disaster for him, which he, to be honest, is looking like a bit of a rabbit in the headlights. Good God, man, I didn't realise being Prime Minister could be this awful. I mean, he's tried to call a general election, bless him, but, you know, Labour and the Lib Dems have stopped him. So
yeah, can I explain that, Tony? Let me explain that, because I've had a load of questions. Let me just explain that. This is important, not to be cutting across you. But a number of people have asked me, why are we not having a general election? The answer is quite simple. Because of the Fixed Term Parliament Act, which says that Parliament has to see out its 5-year term and can only be, early elections can only be called in the event that the government has a 2/3 majority in the House of Commons. That's the Fixed Terms Parliament Act. And he can't get the support. Well, Corbyn could do that. Yeah, but Corbyn doesn't want an election.
To call one.
Well, you know why Corbyn doesn't want an election? Because he will lose badly. Corbyn's polling at about 11% now. Particularly in working class areas.
The best suggestion I've heard, and I think the Tories should do it, is they should call a confidence vote in themselves. don't leave it to Corbyn to do it, because he's never going to do anything.
Never going to do anything.
And in the meantime, you know, what we've got is like you say, preparing a situation of potential unrest on the streets. You know, this is what the Supreme Court is doing. They're not delivering justice at all.
Tony Gosling is our guest this week, org.uk, the politics show BCFM. You've got to listen to it if you haven't checked it out before. Good to have you on, Tony. And we've got about
another angle, quickly.
Go ahead.
It's treason. Treason. Now, remember, this is all about British sovereignty. British sovereignty is in the process of being wrested away, as it has been ever since the Maastricht Treaty, which is what Mrs. Thatcher was booted out for trying to stop. She said famously, "I refuse to hand over this sovereign nation to 13 unelected bankers," and she was booted out by Heseltine and the rest and then John Major came and signed the Maastricht Treaty. But the Maastricht Treaty and the Lisbon Treaty are really about signing assigning sovereignty. So this is a matter of potential treason. So people who are involved in covertly stopping the British people and the British country and attacking the Constitution in this way are potentially could be prosecuted for treason. So this is one of the reasons, I think, that these people have got very, very well organised, very close together, almost cult-like in their attempt to sabotage Brexit, is because they know that if Brexit goes ahead and succeeds, potentially some of them could be liable for treason, which is the only offence, as far as I know, still on the British statute book, which carries the death penalty, Richie. This could also be concentrating their minds.
While all this is going on, Tony, we'll go to the top of the hour with your permission, and then we'll move on. We'll go to the top of the hour. While all this is going on, you mentioned the General Assembly in New York City. Boris Johnson is there. Donald Trump is there. Trump's address, and I've heard many US presidents address the General Assembly. I've heard many secretaries of state address the United Nations and say some pretty dreadful things. Trump's comments today about Iran and Venezuela, it's war footing stuff, Tony. Have you been listening to anybody today?
Yeah, I haven't heard that, but this is exactly the sort of stuff that's been coming out from Pompeo. And with his recent visit to Saudi Arabia, this is all getting very, very, very close. The Iranians have made it clear, if you start continue messing with us, we will knock out further of these oil production facilities. This, of course, could precipitate an enormous international financial crisis. And we, as we know, the Israelis and the United States are just itching to get this war going with Iran. They believe that they can have a whole series of devastating first strikes against Iran, which will make it impossible for the Iranians to then respond afterwards, which is a bit of a Cold War, you know, Russia versus America style situation, only this time ganging up on little Iran, which has been under sanctions for all these years. So this is an apocalyptic style war we could see unfolding here, particularly since the main protagonists will be Israel and Iran, and outside you will have all sorts of superpowers then weighing in. First the United States on Israel's side, then the Russians on Iran's side. I mean, they're already basically down there in that part of the world. They're all over Syria and in other places nearby. And then, of course, the Chinese. They have a big interest as well in that they want to see a Palestinian state set up. They want Jerusalem to be the capital of, or East Jerusalem to be the capital of Palestine. That's right. The Chinese have made it very clear, quietly, that they are on the Palestinian side, not the Israeli side. So anything that happens in Iran could very, very quickly escalate into a world war, and a potential nuclear world war, because this is the sort of game they're playing. And I honestly think they do see it as a game, because if they've gamed it, you know, they use computer simulations and that sort of thing, they believe if they're quick enough, they do X, Y, and Z at the right speed, that they can win, and they can be rid of the Iranian threat once and for all. And they will make it look as if it's some kind of a religious conflict between Islam and Judaism, where actually it's really just about right and wrong. The Iranians should be left to get on with their own business, run their own country as they do quite well, actually. And in fact, their whole democratic system there is, I think, excellent. They have an Islamic state, so that means that whoever stands for an election has to basically be a Muslim. But other than that, they have a very good democratic system where, you know, they have a whole range of candidates that people can vote for. And after that, the country is run as a democracy with a whole bunch of clerics as advisors. And I actually, when I was over there, met some of these clerics. Listen, man, they were really down to earth, very easy to chat with, not uptight at all. And all they wanted to do was to have selfies taken with me. I mean, I just felt that the whole system in Iran was perfectly reasonable and we should just leave them well alone. No, the Pompeo and Trump and Netanyahu all seem to want to go to war with them. And actually, the only thing that we can say about Netanyahu is that at the moment, Israel is doing its very best to get rid of this guy, the worst prime minister by far they've ever had, and of course, you know, a criminal, potentially. He's another one that's worried about going to jail, not just the Gina Miller types of this world and the people collaborating with her, but, you know, he really is corrupt and a criminal, and his son is a super racist. And this is what the Likud party have become. They've become the party of hate. We hate other races, and that's the only way they can now seem to get votes. By appealing to the far-right sentiment, Richie.
Yeah, that's why I followed it with great interest, just like you, Israel, of course. I want to finish 2.5 minutes to go. I've said this morning on the newspaper live stream, and I said it at the beginning of this program. I don't care what anybody thinks about the music of Alison Shablo. I don't care what anybody thinks about the comments made about Israel and about Germany and about the Second World War by Alison Shablo. Many of the things she said I wouldn't agree with, I'm sure Tony wouldn't agree with either. But sending somebody to prison for 8 weeks because they wrote on their WordPress site only a year after you gave them a suspended sentence for their satirical songs, saying that they breached a malicious communications law on YouTube, shows that we live in a tyranny, Tony. I said this morning. I don't give a damn. I have a Jewish pal who agrees with me. He despises Alison Shablo. Despises her. Can't stand her. I can't stand people like that taking the piss out of people and mocking the dead. But he says, you're right, Richie. It's outrageous that she should go to prison a year after she was wrongfully convicted because of her satirical songs. 8 weeks in prison yesterday. What do you think, Tim?
This is basically about freedom of expression.
Yeah.
And yes, I think it's rather disgusting when people deny the Holocaust, say that Jews were not killed in the Second World War by the Nazis. This I find disgusting. But that surely just means that I don't buy her records. It doesn't mean that she has to be jailed. I totally agree with you on that. You know, and what we're seeing is an enormous amount of this now, that certain people are either stopped from standing as political candidates, thrown out of political parties, kicked out of organisation, sacks from their jobs simply from what they say. Now, that is not the way to do things, I don't think. You know, if there's a criminal offence that they've committed, great. But what they're doing is they're creating all these new, basically thought crime style political offences. And what I'm seeing is a society that's going very much downhill. It's stopping people expressing themselves, not just in the press or, you know, on Facebook or whatever, but it's also stopping them expressing their creativity through businesses, through you know, the monopolistic way that Britain particularly operates now. Everybody has got their territory staked out, and everyone that tries to do something just gets stamped on. Now, this is not democracy. This is not freedom. So we're going to have to fight for our freedom if we want to keep it.
Brilliant stuff, mate. Thanks for coming on today. I appreciate you bearing with the technology, and I've had a bit of trouble myself with internet issues, so I really appreciate that. For more on Tony, check out The Politics Show on BCFM Radio in Bristol, thisweek.org.uk. Very, very strange times we're living in, mate. Thanks for your time today, as always.
Cheers, Richie.
Cheers, Tony. Thanks for that. Tony Gosling. And again, The Politics Show, BCFM. If you haven't listened to it, it's a brilliant program. It's about the only program left in the country on FM radio where these issues are discussed openly and freely.